Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Exactly 5:11. Is this a bad thing that this is the best I feel all day between 5 and 9 in the morning? And then after that, it's up and down, and I guess it's good for you, since you're listening, that I feel my best at this hour, but
it's good for your coworkers.
You're giving it your all. And then not so much.
Yeah, and then it's like it's a challenge. My problem today is I feel like I did two shows yesterday, because I talked to this Tribune guy yesterday who's doing an interview. And don't get me wrong, I appreciate the fact that he's nice enough to want to write a story about the new show and all that, but you know, we were talking for like more than an hour, and once I get going, I can't shut up. And then, so I did that about 3:30 yesterday afternoon, and then so I get home about 5 from our interview. We met at a little neighborhood shop, coffee shop, and then I was drained. I felt like I did another show, and I barely can do one show a day, let alone two. Note to self: no more interviews. No. I'm sick of myself anyway. I don't want to read any more about myself.
Did you have your nap? In between?
No. I napped earlier in the day.
Oh, that's good. And then you got refreshed a little.
Yeah, and then here's the other problem. I am going to bed very early, for me anyway. I'm asleep, you know, between 9 and 10 at the latest, which is good for me. But my body's not used to getting that much sleep and going to bed that early, so I wake up at like 1:30 in the morning, and then I do go back to sleep, but you know, my sleep's interrupted, so that's not good. And then last night we watched Curb Your Enthusiasm, because we recorded it on Sunday night, so we watched it last night, and you know, my wife has come around, she likes the show too, so we enjoyed it. And then she wanted to watch another show, and it was still early enough, I could have watched it, but I don't like the show at all. It's called The Politician. It's a Ryan Murphy show. I don't know whether you've seen it.
Oh, yeah. I've heard mixed reviews about that one.
Yeah, we watched one, and I didn't like it that much. And so she wanted to watch it, and I said, nah, I got to go to sleep. And then she said, no, you're just using it as an excuse, and which was partly true, because I just didn't want to watch it. But I think the thinking on her part was she really doesn't like Curb Your Enthusiasm as much as I did, and she watched it with me, so why can't I watch her show with her? So, and I hate going to bed with static in the air, you know what I mean? So those are my problems. What's yours? And let's check in with Eric Rung at WGN-TV. He is on impeachment duty. How you doing, Eric? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Bob.
Have the politicians stopped talking yet?
They have, actually, but only about 4 hours ago. It's a very long day. We're talking about close to 13 hours of debate that happened in the Senate yesterday. This was, of course, the first day of really anything that was going on as far as the trial goes of the impeachment of the president. And this was all about rules. And the GOP had set up the rules. Obviously, they're the majority. They set them up in their favor. Democrats did not like that at all. They proposed a number of amendments to those rules, most of which would have asked for witnesses, the Senate to subpoena witnesses, mostly from Trump's inner circle, like John Bolton, for example, who said he would testify if he was subpoenaed. There's also a lot of the amendments had to do with getting documents from the different departments that had to do with Ukraine and the holdup of aid, which is how this whole thing got started back in July.
So they're back at it at noon Chicago time. Is that right?
Yeah, noon Chicago time is the opening statements. That's when the House managers will get up and start presenting their case against the president. Of course, the president's legal team will then have their chance to defend the president. And the Democrats did win a couple of concessions yesterday. Now, all of this was taking place behind closed doors. And the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, was forced to concede a couple of things after, I think it was about 15 Republicans said that they weren't on board with some of the rules that he had proposed. Mostly, there was really two of them, and one had to do with the amount of time for the presentations by both sides. Originally, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell wanted it to be 24 hours over 2 days, which would have meant testimony would have been going on well into the early morning hours. And so instead, both sides will have 24 hours, except it'll be over 3 days. So not quite as long a days ahead for both sides of the aisle. Those, of course, defending the president and those who are basically prosecuting the case, as well as those 100 senators that are sitting in there listening to all this. I mean, that was a really long day, 13 hours yesterday.
Yeah, it must be torture for all the senators to remain silent.
I've been reading a lot of the, like, little, I don't know, I guess you could say color commentary about what was going on in the well while everybody was doing these debates. And I don't know how much of it you watched yesterday, but, I mean, these were top-notch attorneys going out and making arguments and insulting each other along the way. But some of the color, I guess you could say, of the senators popping gum, also talking, you know, popping mints, trying to stay awake. And, you know, you can't have electronics in the well, so no, they didn't have their cell phones in there. So, I guess why I'm saying the well, I mean the Senate chamber.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was really interesting to listen to some of that. And then I also heard this little tidbit this morning, is that according to Senate rules, you can only have two beverages in the Senate chamber, one of which, of course, is water. Do you happen to know the other one?
I would hope it's coffee.
No, it's milk.
Milk?
Yeah.
And do they
that was interesting, I thought.
Do they have to raise their hand?
I can't imagine, though, that some of those senators aren't sneaking into coffee. I don't know. I mean, that would be tough for 13 hours.
When they need to go to the bathroom, do they need to get permission first?
Well, they have to get a pass from Chief Justice Roberts.
A hall pass.
You have to be seated while presentations are going on. Of course, they do have breaks. I mean, I don't know the exact Senate rules. I'm sure they're being a little lenient just because of the nature of the arguments and how long each side is given to make those arguments. But Senator McConnell yesterday did call for several five-minute breaks, so senators could run out, use facilities. Most of them took that opportunity also to talk to the press and try and spin a little bit as well.
Well, some of us will try to watch some of that again this afternoon, I guess, and tonight. Eric Rung, WGN-TV, on the Washington beat for Channel 9 today. All right, we'll let you get back to work on TV there, Eric. Thanks for the report.
You got it. Have a good morning, guys.
Yeah, you too. And at this time, which is 5:24... give or take a few minutes, we get the first caller on the radio, and that person gets a prize. And today it's Henry from Woodstock. Hey, Henry, good morning.
Morning.
You win. You are the first caller. What are you doing up at this time?
Trying to get to work.
What do you do?
134 electrician.
Now, we have a lot of tradespeople with us during these early hours. Are you on the road already?
Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah, where exactly are you?
90, somewhere between Schaumburg and Elgin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anybody else on the road yet?
Wide open.
Yeah, it's nice. That's one good thing about this time. Hey, I saw a coyote this morning on a street not too far from where I lived before I got on the expressway. He was right in the middle of the road and just running away from the car. He was, like, dead ahead of me, and and just was running straight ahead and then veered off into the woods. Seen any wildlife on your trip yet this morning, Henry?
No, not this morning.
All right. Well, we're going to get you. I'm sorry, what?
No, yeah, I'll see an occasional deer or coyote.
Yeah, you got to be awake and alert for that. How about a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. We'll get that out to you, Henry.
All right, thank you.
All right, you have a good day. All right, hold on now. We'll get all the information we need so we can get that prize to you. It's 526. I was all set on watching some of the Hawks game on TV last night, and then something happened. I couldn't find it. I thought I was watching NBC Sports. Was it on that channel last night? Because I saw a soccer game.
No, it was.
Did I have the wrong sports channel on?
NBC Sports Chicago had the game last night. And, of course, 720 WGN.
Yeah, and I heard a little bit of that because I was in the car. I had to run out and get gas because my wife doesn't like to gas up the car. Especially in the wintertime.
Really?
So she said, oh, by the way, the light's on. You have no gas.
I do the same thing.
What is it with you?
But you would leave Steve without gas, Mary?
No, when my car is low, oh. I'll kind of hint around.
Well, you make him.
It's like, you need to run an errand. Why don't you take my car?
Yeah, but this was your car, Bob?
Yeah, she's driving my car. And
leaves you with no gas?
Uh-huh.
That doesn't seem right.
Well, if I can't do that to her, that's for sure. It's not a fair world. So I heard a little bit of the game on the radio, and then I looked at, you know, we were all set up with new services and TVs in the house. So I hit the guide, and I thought, oh, okay, here's NBC Chicago Sports or whatever they're called now, the old Comcast,
yeah.
And it said soccer. So. Is there more than one sports?
Well, there's NBC Sports. There's NBC Sports Network, which is...
Oh, maybe that's what happened.
You probably got the national...
That's what happened.
NBC Sports.
That's what happened. Yeah.
And sometimes they do have the Blackhawks.
To make it more confusing.
Yeah, so...
Yeah. All right, well, disappointing night. They almost came back, didn't they, last night?
Almost, but... kind of felt like Florida had control of the game. Blackhawks tried to rally. They scored with less than 2 minutes to go, but that was pretty much it.
Nice night, though, for the return of Coach Q. Warm welcome. And then they had a little ceremony with Patrick Kane, and Jill Makita was on the ice with them before the game, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, and I saw, where did I see that picture of... Kane before the game. They had a nice
Dennis Savard was on the ice with him. They honored him for his 1,000th point. And last night he scored a goal. So
yeah.
He's on to his second 1,000.
Yeah. And let's see what else. Oh, Illinois basketball. How about that? They're hot, aren't they?
Yeah. Go Illini.
Yeah. You and my daughter. You know,
that's awesome.
Very excited about their little winning streak going on.
Yeah. Yeah,
very rare we can celebrate.
Thanks for not bringing up Illini. The game I broadcast last night.
Oh, sorry, Dave.
Well, yeah. Northwestern having a few problems.
Not in the first half, but the second half, yeah.
Yeah.
You did a really good job, Dave. Tough, that's what matters.
Tough to play a whole game. All right, we're all set for you this morning. Thanks for joining us. Dave Bennett on sports, Mary Vandeveld on traffic, and in the newsroom, let's go to Steve Grzanich. Let's get more now on that coronavirus everybody's talking about. And O'Hare now is on the watch. Jim Ryan is in Dallas for ABC News with an update. Good morning, Jim.
Yeah, good morning. The Chicago is on watch, as are several other airports around the country. These are places where people are being funneled now from China. If they're coming from Asia, from any one of several Asian countries, they're being funneled through either San Francisco, LAX, JFK, down Chicago, O'Hare, and Atlanta to be tested for coronavirus, this virus that has caused at least 6 deaths in Asia. Now one person has come into contact with someone in China. China brought it into the United States. A person who lives in Snohomish in Washington State is being treated right now. A man described as being in good spirits and in pretty good health now is hospitalized, but expected to be released in a couple of days after he's treated for the symptoms of coronavirus.
440 confirmed cases as of now, and apparently this is a very busy travel period in China leading up to the Lunar New Year holiday. Do we expect more airports to be on notice later today, Jim?
Well, probably not. I mean, these five airports are specifically on notice because these are the ones that experience has told the CDC where people are likely to be funneling through or likely to be coming through. So people who are coming from Asia are being sent to one of these five airports first, and that's where medical staff have been set up to monitor, to test patients or passengers who are coming in, take their temperature, ask them questions about where they've been and whether they came into contact with anyone who is sick. Sounds a lot like Ebola, doesn't it? Because the CDC and other health officials learn from that experience how to handle a situation like this where a potentially problem illness makes its way into the United States. It's not expected to be a terrible issue here in the U.S. because the main thing that is treated are the symptoms. There's no specific treatment for coronavirus. But the symptoms are what are treated in some parts of the world. You know, fever and pneumonia, the different symptoms of a disease like this can be deadly, unlikely to happen here.
And I guess that's the first thing they're checking for at O'Hare and at the other airports, fever, correct?
Yes, correct. Yeah, they give a kind of a general medical checkup on people. And you know, part of that, of course, is asking them questions about people they may have come into contact with. And generally, how are you feeling? You know, so, yeah, they'll take the temperature. They'll run some tests. And if everything checks out okay, they'll be sent on home.
All right. There's the latest on China's coronavirus and here in the U.S. now. Thanks to ABC News and Jim Ryan for the update. Appreciate it, Jim. You have a good day.
You too. Thanks.
Time to say good morning to Orion Samuelson, and he's got the agribusiness update. How you doing, Orion?
Well, I'm doing well, and I hope you are too. And, of course, the big annual convention of the American Farm Bureau Federation came to a close yesterday. But they did have highlights, bad and good. For the third year in a row, President Trump addressed the group. But members of the American Farm Bureau were mourning the loss of the First Lady of the Farm Bureau, the wife of Zippy Duval, who is the president of the American Farm Bureau. She passed away on Sunday night. So it was an up-and-down kind of a session, but it always is a once-a-year meeting of old friends that have been friends for a long time, and they come together at the convention that was held in Austin, Texas this year. And they've been doing it now for over a century that they have been meeting annually to discuss policy, what they think agriculture in this country needs to continue to move forward. And of course, now it's truly an international industry. And again, we're finding that events in China, besides trade disagreements, can certainly have an impact on the market, whether it be on Wall Street or whether it be the grain or livestock market. We're seeing that activity continuing with the concern over the virus in China. And China is poised to increase purchases of the agricultural trade goods. That's part of the Phase One China trade deal. And at the Farm Bureau convention, Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue said that they will not have a need for more farm aid after the China trade deal. And as the secretary said, farmers really prefer making their income off the market activity and rather than government aid. But there's no question, Bob, that the government aid, because of the trade war situation, has been able to keep quite a few farmers in business, because tough times with that trade war that went on and is still going on really for about 18 to 24 months.
So we hear. I'll tell you the business story that caught my eye this morning. Alphabet, the parent company of Google hit another milestone mark. They got up to above $1 trillion for the first time. That makes it the fourth technology company after Apple, Amazon, and Microsoft right. over the past 2 years to pass that $1 trillion mark. Why didn't you urge me to buy stock in that company a long time ago, Orion?
Well, you must have forgot. I did. I was calling you on a daily basis saying technology is the future of income. Oh, there's one other one, too. The medical profession, a shortage of doctors now all over the country. And here in Arizona, where I check in regularly with Mayo doctors, appointments are getting more and more difficult because of the shortage of doctors. So maybe you want to consider a second career as a doctor.
Well, I'm off at 9 in the morning. I have time.
You got all day, man, and you have a good bedside manner because we hear that every day. So,
thank you very much. All right. I'm writing that down so I don't forget that tip from Orion.
Yes.
You have a good day. Always good talking to you, Orion.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. You do the same.
It is almost 5:52. The McDonald's on Ohio Street. I need to talk about that for a second before I forget. I was looking at it as I came into work this morning, and I don't know who designed that after they changed it from the Rock and Roll McDonald's, but it looks like it's under construction all the time. And I feel like putting a sign on it, under construction. Does anybody like that new design? I mean, everybody passes that, and I don't know why they decided to do that. I guess make it more modern and open and inviting so you'd go in there. But I look at it, and I think, well, it's the construction workers are in here today. I better pass by.
Yeah, it's kind of cold-looking.
Exactly, Mary. That's right. Yeah.
It's just not very inviting. Bring back the Golden Arches.
Well, you know, they redesigned all of them, you know, but that's the only one that looks like that. And I just thought I'd point that out this morning. We like to point out things in the city that could be corrected. And I know Dave came in this morning and wanted some adjustments made to the Kennedy Express lanes.
Oh, he did. Oh,
Mary, come on.
I'm so surprised at that.
Mary, you know my express lanes. You know how I feel about it. And this morning, they're open outbound at 4 o'clock in the morning. Why?
I don't know. Because people are coming inbound.
Is it that? Or is somebody falling asleep?
That's my question.
I don't know.
I would think the same thing. Maintenance.
maintenance.
Is it IDOT? Are they in charge?
I would think so. But they were open. But they were open going outbound. That's my issue with
it. Someone was just a little dyslexic this morning.
there appears sometimes to be no rhyme or reason for that.
That's
for
my point.
Yeah. And on the weekends also, sometimes you question that, right? I mean, let's find out about that. We can get somebody from IDOT to talk about that.
I would love to do that.
Oh, boy.
Vivian?
Come on, man.
Yes. Trouble.
Why don't we, sometime, that would be interesting, get somebody from IDOT, the Illinois Department of Transportation. And by the way, they should change, what's the word, is it an acronym? IDOT, would that be an acronym? Is that the correct word I'm using there?
Yes.
They should change that because when you look at that on a truck, it looks like idiot. So they should get rid of that. But let's get somebody in here or on the phone who can tell us how they operate the express lanes. Okay? We'll get on.
I think that would be great. I don't know if anyone else is interested.
No, I think
but I certainly
I think people,
am.
I think people are curious about
Will
that.
Will you use the express lanes?
Yes, I do. I do. And there are some days when they're open and, you know, everybody uses the Google Maps now. And sometimes it's hard to determine whether they're telling you to go into the express lanes or stay in the locals. Right. But, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of folks wonder about that. So we'll get the answers here. And then the ultimate goal is for us to have control here on our control panel in the studio. So when we're not here, somebody else can operate these things based on our needs.
I think that's a great idea.
Okay.
I really like this.
It's 5:55. And let's get into the newsroom and get some information your way. First up, Steve's got the market outlook. Steve?
Bob, thanks. Sponsored by Associated Bank. Leading off the economic reports today, the U.S. existing home sales and the U.S. house price index for November, both due out. Housing industry analysts are forecasting a 0.2% increase over October's prices. That report coming out about 8 o'clock. Existing home sales will be out at about 9 o'clock. Experts are calling for 1.1% increase to an annual rate of 5.41 million dollars. Mortgage Bankers Association has the weekly mortgage application statistics. The Chicago Fed National Activity Index is due out today. We'll also see the Red Books and on the earning calendar, Johnson & Johnson Texas Instruments among the companies reporting quarterly earnings. So plenty of things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, January the 22nd.
Thank you, sir. Coming up after the news, we'll talk a little bit about Yelp and what they're doing now. The latest is they're going to show messages that alert us to bad inspection scores. They started flagging Chicago restaurants with the worst health inspection violations, a feature it hopes will motivate businesses to clean up their acts if they want to keep operating. More on that and the pros and cons of Yelp and those Yelp reviews coming up right after our 6 o'clock update. And then a little later this morning, we'll talk more about that virus, the China virus, the coronavirus, and there's some information we want to pass along to you from somebody who actually advises the White House and the National Security Administration and other government agencies about infectious diseases, Dr. Eileen Marty. She's a professor of infectious diseases and is probably the foremost expert on all this, and we'll be talking to her later on this morning right here. Welcome to the world on Wednesday. This is January 22, 10 after 6. Do you use Yelp for restaurant reviews? Do you check on Yelp before you go to a restaurant or when you're looking for a place to eat? My friends in the restaurant business now tell me that the Google reviews are as important. And there's an interesting story from Yelp this morning about something they're going to do in addition to those reviews. They're going to start flagging restaurants with bad health inspection violations. The Yelp site, which lists about 10,000 Chicago restaurants and bars, rolled out its health alerts feature in Chicago and Los Angeles following a pilot program in their hometown of San Francisco. Users of the site will now see a pop-up message alerting them to a bad health score as they scroll down a restaurant's review page. While Yelp already displays restaurants' health scores on their individual pages, a number calculated from health inspection data pulled from public local government sources, the alerts go a step further in drawing attention to violators. If you're like me, what you do is you don't really rely on one review. You go through a lot of them and see if there's some common thread, because it's too easy for a disgruntled worker to post a bad fake review, or maybe the owner themselves gets on there with a review. But I think if you look at a lot of them, you get a true picture, don't you think?
I think so. Although what I'd like to see us do is what they do in New York City, which is they post the letter grade in the window of the restaurant.
Yeah, they do that in L.A. as well.
Oh, do they?
Uh-huh.
I mean, I most of them have pretty good grades because they have, you figure they probably have to, or they're not going to get anybody to come in.
That is a good, we've never done that in Chicago. I don't know why. Yeah, that is good. And I often wonder, when you see a B grade or, C, even a B, though, would you think twice about going into the place? Because most of them have A grades, and the good ones certainly do. But now you'll get that information on Yelp. I'm trying to think if I have ever posted anything on Yelp or Google in the way of a review. I think maybe one time. I don't know. But then again, I have this.
Yes,
I have this microphone.
You do a verbal review.
Yeah.
I've done some reviews on TripAdvisor once in a while.
Yeah, that's another one that it's so important to these businesses now. They many times they ask you or they'll give you a card, hotels and restaurants, because that's the way we make decisions these days, isn't it?
It is.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, everyone.
Now the Top 6 at 6 with Bob Saras on WGN Radio.
I thought you'd never ask. 6:18, and this is where we go over the top six of the day. Let's start with President Trump's historic impeachment trial that began with acrimony as lawyers for the president and House members, known as impeachment managers, clashed in personal and bitter arguments over the rules that will govern the trial. The Senate has voted to block three attempts by Democrats to subpoena documents for the impeachment trial that the White House has refused to provide to the House investigators. The vote was cast along party lines, with Senator Mitch McConnell's proposed rules changed even since he had unveiled them, allowing both sides to present their cases for and against removing Mr. Trump from office over 3 days, not two, though each side is still limited to 24 hours total. He also allowed the House's evidence from its inquiry to be admitted into the Senate record.
Stand by for news.
Yes, we are. Number two, a U.S. resident who recently traveled to China has been diagnosed with the newly identified coronavirus that has sickened more than 300 people. Actually, that number up to 440 now. It's killed at least six in China. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, said all of this late yesterday. Officials preparing for more U.S. cases of the coronavirus that originated in the Chinese city of Wuhan. And the travel alert has been raised for that city to a level 2, calling for enhanced precautions. Under that alert level, the CDC recommends travelers to Wuhan should avoid contact with sick people, animals, or animal markets. The World Health Organization has called a meeting today to discuss whether to declare the outbreak an international health emergency. Airports around the world and O'Hare have stepped up monitoring and screening passengers from China for signs of illness in hopes of containing the virus. That screening had been underway at three U.S. airports, Kennedy in New York, LAX in San Francisco, and yesterday the CDC announced it would add O'Hare and Atlanta's airport to the mix.
Now, page two.
Illinois lawmakers are raising questions about the integrity of state elections after the Secretary of State admitted hundreds of non-citizens were registered as voters and could have cast ballots illegally in the 2018 election. In a letter, Secretary of State Jesse White's office said a programming error in a signature pad at driver's services facilities led to hundreds of non-U.S. citizens accidentally being registered as voters. Secretary of State's office said the problem has been fixed, but state lawmakers and election authorities are just beginning to raise concerns.
Page three.
The Boeing 737 MAX now officially on hold. The assembly line in Washington State has temporarily stopped building Boeing's best-selling plane. The company confirming this information. Boeing announced plans to pause production for an undetermined period in December, but it had not previously announced a precise day for the shutdown. Boeing will not furlough or lay off workers because of that shutdown, but it can hurt its supply chain and America's economic growth, according to the experts. The shutdown will make restarting production and recovering from the crisis more difficult for Boeing once it finally gets permission for the plane to fly again. In a statement from the FAA, the administration said its first priority is safety, and it is following thorough and deliberate processes to verify that all proposed modifications to the Boeing 737 MAX meet the highest certification standards.
Page four.
Jeff Bezos in the news this morning. Yesterday, Saudi Arabia dismissed as absurd reports that the country's powerful crown prince hacked into the cell phone of Jeff Bezos. The foreign minister, Prince Al Saud, said the allegation was silly as well as absurd. But the story alleges that Bezos' cell phone was hacked in 2018 after he received a WhatsApp message from the kingdom's crown prince Salman, the power behind the throne, widely known as MBS. The Guardian reports it obtained the leaked results of a forensic analysis, which showed it was highly probable that the hack was triggered by a corrupted video file sent by the crown prince's account.
To whom it may concern.
Well, I like that one. Two, is everybody enjoying that instead of the crumpled paper and then the news anchor closing announcements that we were trying out the past few days?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to go with
much better.
Yes.
All right. Okay, that's how we do things here. It cuts down on the post-show meetings. That way I can leave here earlier, because otherwise we talk about all of this after the show. My philosophy is just do it right here on the radio. Let everybody get involved in there. Include everybody. Let everybody hear what's going on here. I know you're not supposed to go into the back and see how they, you know, make the sausages, but, you know, we're trying everything out here. Where are we? Oh, number six, right? Okay, two different airbag glitches have forced Toyota and Honda to recall more than 6 million vehicles worldwide, and both problems present different dangers to motorists. The Toyota recall affects about 3.4 million vehicles globally and is being done because the airbags may not inflate in a crash. The cars have airbag control computers made by ZFTRW that are vulnerable to electrical interference and may not signal the bags to inflate. The problem could affect as many as 12.3 million vehicles in the U.S. made by six companies. It's possible that as many as eight people were killed when airbags did not inflate, and U.S. safety regulators are investigating.
That's the way it is.
This has been the Top 6 at 6 with Bob Sirach on WGN Radio.
Good day. And I have a bonus. We'll call this number 6.5, if I can find it here. Oh, yeah. Okay. Did you ever go into a papyrus store? They have six shops in Illinois. They're in the Loop. They're at Northbridge, Water Tower Place, in the suburbs at Oakbrook Center, Old Orchard, and Northbrook Court Malls. And my wife likes that shop. They sell greeting cards and other sort of high-end paper products. And Mrs. Surratt enjoys shopping there because it's expensive. Anyway.
Expensive stationery.
Yes, exactly. They are closing all their stores, including the six in Illinois. Employees said they were told last week that all stores were expected to close in the next 4 to 6 weeks. Closing sales have already begun in stores and online. Their parent company, Sherman Retail Group, based in Tennessee, not immediately reached for comment on this story. They haven't publicly announced the closures. According to their website, Papyrus has more than 260 stores in the U.S. and Canada. And I'm sure that one of the problems, we're all sending emails now, right? Nobody sends...
Nobody writes nice thank you notes anymore.
No, exactly.
And they don't need the stationery. It's too bad, because I love these stores.
Yeah, and I was thinking about this the other day, because I came across an old email I had. I was cleaning out, I was deleting some emails because I logged in and it said you have 48,000 emails or something. So I thought, well, maybe I better start clearing these out. And I came across one that I had. Do you know who Gene Pitney is or was? A great rock star of the 60s, mm-hmm. Town Without Pity, and many other hits. Anyway, I was a big fan of his, and I got to meet him and interview him years ago. And then I communicated with him a little bit, and I had a nice email from him. And I thought, now, back in the day, maybe you'd have a letter, and you'd keep it in a folder or somewhere in a memory box and be nice to have. What am I supposed to do with an email from somebody I want to, you know, somebody I want to remember? I want to save it. Do I print it and save the email? It's not very personal.
I've done that before.
Really?
I know, but it's not
the same.
It's not cursive or anything or written. It's but at least you have proof of when it was sent and the time and the date and all that. So
yeah, I know.
I've done that, yeah.
You know, I have, years ago, I wrote a letter to Andy Rooney, and he did some commentary I liked, and I got a nice letter back from him, and it was very amusing, and then, you know, you get his signature, and that makes sense, right? Save that. But the email seems very impersonal. It really does. Anyway, Papyrus closing all their stores, those locations expected to shutter in the next 4 to 6 weeks. And so far, this information is coming from the employees. because the parent company has not officially commented or posted anything on their website. But the story in the news today and in the Tribune this morning. It's 6:28. Coming up, we'll talk about legal matters with Karen Conti, attorney at Conti Law. And you hear also on WGN Radio. And among other things, Karen is going to be talking about this morning will be the Harvey Weinstein trial, which is underway. And today will be a big day there. Karen will go over that. And also, very interesting commentary on shoveling your walk. Is it illegal not to shovel your walk? What are the rules exactly about when you have to shovel and how? And what do you do if the business you're going to or the business you own, what do you do if the walk is not cleared there? Well, what if residents don't shovel? So we'll get into winter matters with Karen Conti coming up this morning after our 6:30 news. And then we'll have the extremely local news, our neighborhood report for many Chicago neighborhoods from Block Club Chicago. That'll be coming out after 7 this morning. You want to get in touch with us? Here's the phone number, which is also the number for texts, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And email at... oh, no, here it is. Bobshow@WGNRadio.com. Bobshow@WGNRadio.com for email. That Twitter is at Bob Surratt. You need a lawyer? Who doesn't? Let's say good morning to Karen Conti. And she's with you on Sunday nights here at 7 p.m. on WGN Radio. And we like to check in with her during the week. Morning, Karen.
Good morning, Bob.
How are you doing today? And what do you expect from the Harvey Weinstein lawyers and jurors later?
Well, that's going to be an interesting day because opening statements are starting, and that's always an interesting thing because both parties are going to lay out their case, going to basically give the jury the roadmap on what the evidence is going to be. And I think we're going to see some things that are going to tug us both ways. Whatever we feel about Harvey Weinstein, there's going to be some evidence, I think, that indicates that a lot of these women stayed in touch with him after the alleged assaults. So, you know, it's going to tug on the jurors to try to decide whether or not this was consensual or not.
And what do you think of the makeup of the jury?
Yeah, that's interesting. It's basically, I would say that it's a pro-Weinstein jury in that there are 6 white men and 2 white women. So a male-heavy jury probably would be good for him, normally speaking. People who might identify with an older white male. On the other hand, there was an alternate juror. I'm not sure if you heard about it, but she was writing a novel, and the novel was about predatory older men. And for some reason, the questions didn't really get down to asking her the precise questions. It was later found out she was writing this book, and she's one of the alternates. So if for some reason during this 5 or 6 week trial, one of the jurors maybe gets sick or something and she actually comes on the jury, that might be a problem for Harvey.
Would you have argued that she should have been dismissed?
They did argue that, and I would argue that very loudly. The idea that she was writing a book on the very issue of kind of what's at stake here seems to me to be very prejudicial. The judge, for some reason, didn't think it was for cause and told the lawyers that they're going to have to use one of their challenges. You only get 20 challenges, and they were out of challenges, so this woman is going to stay on the jury. Now, the problem with this is, of course, no matter what you think, whether you would like to see him convicted or not, you want this to be a fair trial. Because if he's convicted, you want to be able to say, this was a fair jury, it was selected impartially, and they deliberated with no prior prejudice. And this kind of teaches the jury if she actually sits on it, in my view.
So opening statements today, and briefly, what will the prosecution be arguing? What is the defense trying to accomplish today?
Yeah, the prosecution is, you're not making arguments, so you're kind of just giving the roadmap, like this is what the evidence is going to show. They're going to establish that Harvey Weinstein was a powerful man, that these women came there not expecting this to happen, that there was no consent. That they have suffered throughout, that there are numerous women who have had this happen to them, et cetera. That's going to be what the prosecution is going to say. And of course, the defense is going to say, well, these women knew what they were getting into. These women wanted to get an advantage in their career. They knew his reputation, and they're going to talk about all of the notes and emails that were sent to Harvey from these women subsequent to it. And I think that's going to be very damning for the prosecution, because a lot of people do not understand that sometimes rape victims actually do stay in touch with their perpetrator. It's not an uncommon thing. It's almost a phenomenon psychologically. So it's going to be, I think it's going to be a really interesting day, because we're going to see what the case is all about.
Yep. Sounds like it. We've got Karen Conti with us talking about legal issues like shoveling snow. Karen, is it illegal not to shovel your walk?
It is, and most cities have a statute on the books that says when you have to shovel and how you have to shovel. So, for instance, Chicago, there's a very specific law that says that if it snows between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., you have to shovel by 10 p.m. And if it snows between 7 p.m. and 7 a.m., you have to shovel by 10 a.m. So 7 to 7 and 10, that's kind of the rule. And it actually sets forth how many inches. It has to be 5 inches of shoveling. And if you don't do it, you can be fined $50 for residents and up to $500 if you're a business.
So that applies to residents and businesses, what you just mentioned.
That's right. And people always ask, too, you know, if you don't own the building, but maybe you're just a tenant in an apartment building and the landlord doesn't shovel, does that mean that you have to shovel? And that's a really interesting point, because you as a tenant are responsible for shoveling, and you should look to your lease and see if the landlord provides that he's going to do that. But if the landlord is not doing it, you might have to go out there and do it yourself.
And as far as somebody slipping and falling, maybe injuring themselves in front of a business or in front of your house, who's liable?
That's a good one, too. The legislature passed a law that said that if you go out and shovel, you are not going to be responsible for someone slipping and falling. Because you know what? It happens. And we can't all shovel perfectly. And sometimes shoveling actually makes things a little slipperier, unfortunately. So for the most part, you're going to be immune from any liability if someone falls on your property, unless what you've done is create what they call an unnatural accumulation, which is a very strange thing. So, for instance, if water is coming off of your roof and it's accumulating in something in an area that's not what would normally be on the ground, but for what you're causing, that then could make you liable. So it's a really kind of a rare situation. That would mean that you'd have to be actually creating something that was worse than it was initially.
So if you're a business owner and there is a parking lot connected to your business, are you responsible for that area too? Do you have to clear the snow there? And could you be liable if somebody fell in the parking lot?
You would be responsible for clearing that, and you could be fined for not clearing that. In fact, if someone sees a parking lot or sees a sidewalk that's not shoveled, you can call 311 and report them, and they have, like, the shoveling police who come out and cite you for these types of things. But it is hard to find an owner liable, because you want to encourage people to go out and shovel. And so, again, it's not always perfect. So, there, you know, let's just say that, you know, maybe it's not properly lit, or there's other problems with the parking lot, then you could probably sue. But generally speaking, those are very hard lawsuits to win, and most of the time the business owners will prevail on them.
I like that, the shoveling police. I haven't seen them.
Yeah, and there's one more thing I should tell people. If you're elderly or you can't get out and shovel for some reason or another, you can actually call the city of Chicago. They have a volunteer snow corps volunteer group, and they will come out and shovel for you.
In case you missed it, they're talking about some snow accumulation possible overnight tonight, and then also tomorrow, Friday, and then maybe even into Saturday. Karen, before I let you go, I have to ask you a question concerning the impeachment trial. I think only lawyers can watch that for more than about 5 minutes. Have you been watching?
No, I've checked out.
Not even lawyers are checking out of that, too? I would think that if you're a lawyer, you'd sort of be curious about the lawyers who are arguing both sides of the case.
You know, I guess I should be, but I also have a job, and I kind of feel like, wake me up when it's over.
Yeah.
Does anyone have that same feeling?
All I know is I'm going around today asking people questions and then asking for yays and nays, so I think I watched too much of that yesterday. What do you got planned for Sunday night? Karen Conti's on the radio here in WGN, 7 p.m. Sunday evening, and I know you you take calls and check texts and so forth and so on. What else you got planned for the weekend?
It's a short show because I think I get preempted for half my show. So really, I'm probably going to be just talking about news stories. I might have Harvey Weinstein's lawyers on because they are from Chicago and they're friends of mine, and probably just take legal calls and call it a night.
And that's interesting. Defending Harvey Weinstein in this trial, I mean, the publicity is so enormous. So it's not like you can go to a different city and maybe find jurors that have not been exposed to all that publicity. Pardon the word "exposed" there, but you know, how do you do that? I mean, in the face of all of the terrible publicity he's received, how do you fight that if you're a defense attorney?
It's very, very hard, and I think they're making these motions to move the case to Long Island for that very reason. I mean, these jurors are not sequestered, and they're walking past all kinds of protesters who are out there, and there's a lot of pressure on jurors to do the right thing. I mean, I think for the most part, Bob, that jurors, when they sit and they watch the case, they really do a good job. They try to just focus on the facts at hand, but that's a lot of pressure. So, you know, there might be jurors who are afraid to do one thing or another because they're afraid of the ramifications. So it's a very difficult thing, especially in this day and age, when the jurors are coming home and probably seeing stuff on social media and on television. And it's just a hard thing to do to get a fair trial.
Yeah, well, and moving it to Long Island, I mean, how is that going to be much different as far as publicity and the coverage of all of this?
Well, it's not, and that's the problem, because the protesters in these kinds of cases, high-profile cases, will go to wherever the trial is. So, yeah, it's a very difficult thing, and I think we're going to see maybe some jurors who are – we've already had a juror who was put off the jury because he or she was tweeting, and the judge specifically said, you can't do it, and this juror did it. So, and to ask people to do that to 5 or 6 weeks of their lives, it's kind of a challenge.
Let me sneak in a couple of quick questions here. We got via text from 708. You mentioned Chicago, talking about these laws governing shoveling. What about the suburbs? Every suburb is going to be different, I would imagine.
Yeah, every suburb is different. You could probably just Google it with your municipality, and they're kind of the same. They're pretty similar. Chicago's a very average statute, but yeah, that's the best way to do it, or call your city hall and see what they have to say.
And one more. This is Carl in Jefferson Park asking who's responsible to shovel the sidewalks on bridge decks and underpasses. These are regularly among the most dangerous sidewalks for pedestrians to navigate. I imagine that would be the responsibility of the city, wouldn't it?
That is correct. So your responsibility basically entails where your property abuts. So if you're living in a house, it's that sidewalk, even though that's not your sidewalk, it's public property, but it is your responsibility for whatever's contiguous to your house. So if you live on a corner lot, unfortunately, you have both sides that you have to do. You have to shovel. But yeah, anything out there, you know, out away from a residency is going to be the municipality's responsibility.
Got it. All right. Thanks, Karen Conti, attorney at Conti Law. And we'll be listening here on WGN Sunday night at 7. And you have a good day.
Happy shoveling, Bob.
Yeah, right. Thanks, Karen. It's almost 6:56 now, almost 4 minutes before 7 o'clock. Coming up after our 7 o'clock news, we've got an interesting story about pizza royalty in Chicago and the passing of someone who was connected to the family that practically invented deep dish pizza. We'll get to that and our extremely local news report from Block Club Chicago, also after 7 o'clock today. And we have an expert, and she is really the expert on this virus from China, the coronavirus. And we'll be talking to her. Dr. Eileen Marty is somebody who actually advises the policymakers and government agencies in Washington about what to do when it comes to infectious diseases. And we're going to be able to talk to her this morning at about 7:40 and get the lowdown on what's happening with this virus, what the symptoms are, is it likely to get worse before it gets better, and how exactly is it spread? So that's all coming right up here on the Bob Surratt Morning Program. Good to have you with us. Good morning, it's Bob Surratt, Human Alarm Clock, 10 after 7. And, you know, we have a lot of pizza royalty around Chicago, and Maureen O'Donnell has written a very, very interesting story. It's an obit, and frequently these obituaries contain some really great stories about people and their accomplishments. I know a lot of folks talk about the New York Times obituaries, must-reading. Well, you know, Maureen does a great job for the Sun-Times on this, too, and she writes about Donna Marie Malnati. Today. Her husband, Rudy Malnati, developed his pizza prowess while working at Pizzeria Uno, the birthplace of deep dish pizza. He passed on his knowledge to his sons, Lou and Rudy, who started two of Chicago's most popular pizza places, Lou Malnati's and Paisano's. Mrs. Malnati, a registered nurse who learned the secret of making good pizza dough from her husband, died in Chicago at the age of 93. She had been in failing health, according to her son, Rudy Jr. Though Mama Malnati helped her son develop the thin crust of Paisano's, he said she never switched her allegiance from deep dish. She left explicit instructions on the food to be served at the upcoming celebration of her life. "I don't want that damn thin crust pizza," he said she told him. "The only thing I want served is our original deep dish sausage and cheese." Isn't that funny?
Yeah, it is.
Young Donna grew up in Muscatine, Iowa. She went to Chicago to study nursing at Northwestern University and work at Wesley Memorial and Passavant Memorial Hospital. When she dropped in one day at Pizzeria Uno on East Ohio, Rudy Malnati was on the floor running the restaurant, their son said. He would go on to operate Pizzeria Due and Su Casa, a Mexican restaurant. A lot of people don't know that connection to Su Casa. When they got married, they celebrated at Ricardo's Restaurant, which was owned by Rick Ricardo, who has been credited with starting Pizzeria Uno with Ike Sewell. I love this obituary because this is Chicago history here, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It really is. Mrs. Malnati was still creating crust at Paisano's 4 years ago when she was approaching 90. Her kitchen magic was the dough. She handled the dough and I handled the restaurant, according to her son. Her husband, Rudy, died in 1974. In addition to her son, Rudy, who I know, she is survived by four grandchildren. Her son, Robert, and stepson, Lou, died before she did. Celebration of life is planned on Sunday afternoon at the Paisano's on South Indiana. Chicago Magazine also, you can probably Google it and read it. They did a wonderful article on her expertise a few years ago. So Donna Mama Malnati, who helped develop the crust of Paisano's pizza restaurants operated by her son, Rudy Malnati Jr., passes away, and our best to Rudy and the family. I love the headline, too, on this story. Doughmaker extraordinaire was a member of one of the city's first families of pizza. Only Chicago would have a first family of pizza. Isn't that great? Let's get some extremely local news now. Seamus Toomey is here, the editor-in-chief and co-founder of Block Club Chicago. Good morning. How you doing, Seamus?
Good morning, Bob. Thanks for having me. Doing great.
Let's talk first about what many people have noticed on Lakeshore Drive and also along the lakefront there. Is this a result of the storms we had? What's happening there?
It's actually been going on for a lot longer than the lake has been rising. I learned this week that the locals refer to it as Lake Wellington. It's the soccer field right there at Lakeshore Drive, a little bit south of Belmont. It's actually at Wellington, and it's, you know, you every most of the time I drive by it, it's under a foot of water, filled with geese. You know,
yeah. The fact that the folks there are calling it Lake Wellington is not good.
No, it's. I mean, it's a beautiful field. It's right there on the lake. It's just on the other side of Lakeshore Drive. So in theory, it'd be a great place to play soccer, softball, whatever. But it's always underwater. It's just poor drainage there, and it's in the news because there is a proposal to fix it and put a artificial turf field down there that could be used for both Lincoln Park High School and Lakeview High School. They could bring kids over there to play on it. The neighbors could use it as well when the high schools aren't using it. Neighbors are not excited about it. Neighbors are, you know, frankly, never excited about, you know, when parks are going to get ripped up for a while and replaced with artificial turf. They say, why can't we just have our natural grass?
But, yeah, why can't they just put in some drainage there and fix the problem that way? And this is going to be very expensive, too.
Right. They're talking about $3 million, which seems to be, these turf fields usually cost about $1 million or so, but the significant drainage problems there, obviously adding to it. But yeah, they're trying to do a two for one here, where they're going to raise it up 3 or 4 feet, I believe, to get it up out of the water, put in this turf, put in the drainage, have a place for the kids to play, and the geese are going to be out of luck.
Poor geese. Let's talk a little bit about what's happening since Ken Nordine passed away. And for people not familiar with Ken, he was one of the great voices, great commercial voices, great radio producers of all time, and we were lucky enough to have him here in Chicago for a long, long time. He also he was the voice on many things you're familiar with. He did some work for the Blackhawks and so many commercial accounts, and there's a fight brewing over his house, right?
Yes, Ken lived for decades at a big mansion in Edgewater on the 6100 block of North Kenmore. Yeah, like you said, he had been, you know, the voice of so many different things and had operated out of that. He had a home studio there and just a gorgeous old brick mansion. It's, in fact, the only single-family home left on that block. That block has really turned into large apartment buildings and condo buildings. When Ken died last year at age 98, his family decided to put the house on the market, and they listed it as a redevelopment opportunity, and that obviously got preservationists concerned. It's off the market now, but there's a demolition permit filed, so it appears that, you know, the owners want to go forward with knocking it down and replacing it. It's all zoned, you know, for an apartment building. So, I mean, they've been waiting for this day to go and sort of finish off the block. But preservationists are trying very hard to keep it.
Yeah, and a lot of people remember him for the famous Word Jazz and all the work he did there. And years and years ago, I remember interviewing him for television and being in that place, and it was like a museum in Edgewater, right? I forget exactly where that was.
Yes, it's in Edgewater.
Yeah, and so
right
hopefully
on Kenmore.
On Kenmore, yeah. Hopefully they'll preserve something over there. And also on the preservation front, this is interesting. The home of Chicago's first black alderman in the news today.
Yeah, this was a cool story this week. There's been an ongoing project to preserve the home of Oscar Stanton DePriest, which he was the Chicago's first black alderman. For a while, he was the only black member of Congress. He was elected alderman in 1915, so, you know, we're going back a long time. County board member, just sort of a very prominent member, particularly around Bronzeville, where he lived for decades and decades. He lived on King Drive at a 45th and King, owned a large building, and the woman who inherited it, it had been sold, you know, he passed away years ago. It was designated historic landmark in 75. The woman who inherited applied for grants, got preservation groups involved, got a little bit of grant money to rebuild this building, or restore it, I should say. The roof needed work, the outside masonry needed work, and it's finally done on Martin Luther King Day. They had a big ribbon cutting ceremony to show it off, and it's stunning. And there's a great big I wouldn't say plaque. It's bigger than a plaque. It's about a 10-foot sign there describing DePriest's contributions to Chicago and why this site is historically significant. And, you know, a cool part of the story was, you know, kids were walking by this sign on Monday and saying, oh, I didn't know, you know, I didn't know there was history right in front of me here in Bronzeville. And now it's through the efforts of the current owner, Kimberly Eccles. They were able to preserve it and give someone some pride and some things to, you know, to point to and show off in the neighborhood.
So I know this was designated a historic landmark many years ago, back in the 70s, and I'm always confused when that happens. Does that really protect the structure or not?
You know, there's a million different designations. The higher they get, the federal landmarks get lots of protection, as well as some funding to restore it. But as long as you get a city landmark protection, that does protect it from a whole host of things, including demolition. It doesn't always fund the repairs, though, and that can be the problem.
And finally, we have a story, and I love putting the spotlight on people like this, because you probably won't see this on the news, on television. Frank's Barbershop. And this is a story about a very kind man, isn't it?
Yeah, this is, you know, this is the sort of story that a newspaper would put on in the back page in the obits. Block Club Chicago, we've got this leading our site right now, because these are the sort of people that we like to highlight. These are the neighbors of Chicago that really sort of, like, you know, define the fabric of the community. Frank Berrios had lived, you know, he had operated this barbershop for years and years. It was most recently at 2403 West Homer. He operated it for 56 years, and just through the, you know, the highs and lows of the neighborhood, you know, there was when there was a lot of crime there, he would welcome in people as sort of a safe haven. As the area has gentrified, he lent out some of his space to the bar next door, because it was becoming such a sort of a hipster haven that you know, he sort of rolled with the punches, and everyone knew him. He was, you know, he was just a kind man, immigrant from Puerto Rico, or he came here from Puerto Rico, met his wife here, raised a family here, just sort of the local success story, and just stuck around in the Bucktown neighborhood, moved a couple shops around as prices went up, but stayed within a couple blocks, and just, cut the hair of the homeless for free, discounts for other people that couldn't necessarily afford it. And he passed away last year. Last month, his family just had a big memorial for him at the bar that is now, that used to be the barbershop.
I love those great Chicago stories. And so that was in Bucktown, right?
That was in Bucktown, yes. Yeah, like he was at 1856 Northwestern for years and years. In 81, he moved to around the corner to West Homer. But like I said, just around that area, if you lived in that area, you knew Frank.
I love also many of these obituaries that tell these great life stories of Chicagoans. We just a few minutes ago were talking about Donna Mama Malnati, who helped develop the crust at Paisano's Pizza restaurants, operated by her son Rudy Malnati Jr. And there were sort of two wings of that famous family, and there was the one that led to Paisano's, and then of course Malnati's. And Donna Marie passed away, and she also made it to 93. And those are the stories that are so unique to Chicago, aren't they?
And I tell young reporters, there's nothing really more important than you can do than that. And to do an obituary right, because this is the last thing that's going to be written about these people.
Yes.
And if you do it right, the families will love you forever. They'll hang it on the wall. If you do it wrong,
yeah, and they're so interesting, though, because you talk about Frank's Barbershop and Malnati's and Paisano's. These are Chicago history lessons. They really are.
Exactly. And they'll be filed away, and people will look this up and refer back to them for years. So it's always good to recognize the people that made Chicago what it is.
All right. All right, and thanks to Block Club Chicago for keeping us informed on that. Seamus Toomey, we'll talk to you folks tomorrow.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Coming up after our 7:30 news, we have the expert on infectious diseases in this country to talk about the coronavirus, what's happening there, what's happening at O'Hare. And, of course, being a hypochondriac, I'll be pressing her on the symptoms. This radio station does employ two drive-time radio hosts who are acknowledged and confessed hypochondriacs. Ro Khan, I think, is maybe worse than I am. So, you know, if you listen in the morning and you listen in the afternoon, you're going to get your health news. There's no question about it. Let's get the rest of the news right now, and then we'll talk with our expert on infectious diseases and get you caught up on all of that and more. Bob Surratt, new Morning Mouth with you, and I want to get the lowdown on a little bit of a scrap the other morning during the skate. Jonathan Toews and Duncan Keith apparently went at it a little bit. The confrontation ended with Toews on top pulling Keith's jersey off. Mm-hmm. Do we know what happened exactly, Dave? Why that happened?
Well, the explanation was, both were kind of intense, and they knew it was a big game last night for them, and it was a little surprising because, look, these guys have played together forever. But afterwards, they both kind of shrugged it off, and Jeremy Colladan, I thought, had the best comment of anybody about it. He said that, if you have a brother, well, I think he asked the reporter, asked him, do you have a brother?
Right.
And it was a male reporter, and he said, I've got boys at home, and I've seen this movie before. And that's kind of, they brushed it off as sort of boys will be boys, kind of a little, brotherly love, so to speak.
It was at the practice.
It was
right?
At the morning skate, yes.
Okay.
And apparently all was forgiven, and all the players kind of fired everybody up, I think.
Well, yeah, not enough to win last night, no. Although they did come back.
They did come back. Toews drew a penalty late that any chance they had of tying the game late, that pretty much finished it. But, he was called for a penalty. Those kinds of things happen from time to time, and I think we all tend to fixate on it. It becomes a bigger deal than it probably was to any of them.
Yeah.
it is kind of part of the sport. And
it sure is.
It was, sometimes it can fire up a team. Now, that's one fight, Bob. The more serious one occurred last night in a college basketball game in Lawrence, Kansas, and a really ugly scene between Kansas and Kansas State. The two coaches are former coaches at Illinois. Bruce Weber, a Kansas State coach, coached at Illinois, and Bill Self of Kansas. And the game's over. They're just kind of running out the clock. And then a player for Kansas State, Kansas had the game won, had the ball. Player for Kansas State went for the steal, got the steal. The player he stole the ball from blocked his shot right as the game ended. I mean, the two teams were already in the handshake line when this was all happening. So the coaches didn't even see it. They were shaking hands. And meantime, the players broke into this wild brawl that spilled over into a disabled seating section behind one of the baskets.
This is ugly.
And the player who had the ball stolen from him, big guy, picked up a stool and was holding it over his head. And a coach had to rip it out of his arms. There were punches thrown. It was really bad. I mean, you see little skirmishes once in a while, but this one got way out of hand. So yeah. You'll be hearing a lot about that today.
Yeah, these are angry brothers.
Yeah, this was not the same.
It's almost 7:43. We'll get more on the coronavirus and what we're doing about it, and whether or not the experts think it's going to get worse before it gets better. And we're fortunate enough to have the expert on infectious diseases with us on the phone this morning. Eileen Marty is a professor in the Department of Medicine at FIU College of Medicine, and she works on developing plans, programs, training, and policy for the White House, National Security Administration, and other government agencies. Good morning, Dr. Marty, and due to the length of your resume that I just read, we have no time to talk to you now.
Hey, Bob.
Let's talk about what's going on here. And, of course, O'Hare affected now. What's the latest on this? You're on top of it like nobody else in the country. Is it going to get worse before it gets better?
Well, like all of these infections, yes, the likelihood is that we'll see more cases before we are able to put our arms completely around the outbreak. That's the bad news. Good news is we do have many more tools in place and ready to go and methodologies that we didn't have, for example, during the SARS outbreak and were developed after the MERS outbreak. So, yes, it will spread. How far and how wide before we get our arms around it, nobody can tell you that right now. Where are we now? We know that there have been over 2,000 contacts. We know that there's been a little over 440 cases reported primarily in China, primarily in Wuhan, that the initial contacts were people who were workers at a live animal market, and we know that there are cases in several other countries, one in Japan, one in South Korea, three in Thailand, some in Taiwan, one in Taiwan, and now in the United States as well, that have been confirmed cases, but every single case outside of China is from an individual who was exposed to patients in China.
You mentioned SARS. Let me read something to you. Dr. Robert Murphy from Northwestern University's infectious disease program, he said this is going to be a really big disaster. Basically, this is the next SARS, and there is no treatment. It isn't routinely diagnosed. It can be transmitted person to person, and it can kill you. It wouldn't surprise me if the same happened here. The U.S. is totally unprepared for handling this epidemic. Do you agree with all that?
No, I don't. I don't agree with that, because even though many of the individual statements in that paragraph are true, what parts are not true is that we are far more knowledgeable in how to contain this than we were during the SARS outbreak. And so, you know, we have better methodologies. The world has prepared for pandemics that we hadn't prepared for in 2002. Every government in the world has plans. We have ways to isolate people. And we have CRISPR. And we have other new technology that has allowed us to very rapidly sequence this virus. We know its genetic sequence is RNA virus. And we know, and we are in the process, and probably even by the end of this week, we'll have a rapid PCR that can be used to provide a very rapid diagnosis for this particular infection. So, no, I don't agree. Another thing is SARS had super spreaders. This particular virus does not seem, at least at this time, to have super spreaders, but rather those cases that have been transmitted person to person have been onesies and twosies from individual patients and not one person infecting 15 people, that sort of thing.
You mentioned rapid PCR. What's that?
Oh, thank you, Bob. So polymerase chain reaction is a technology developed in California, and it's a way of very fast expanding a sequence of genetic information, right? So we can use that to analyze a sample. We can use it to rapidly reproduce something that we want to reproduce genetically so as to make something new. So we do it for sequencing and we do it for production of new stuff. And in the use here that I was alluding to, it's that we are identifying unique parts of this virus that will, within just a very short period of time, enable a physician or nurse or whoever encounters a potential victim of this disease to specifically say, okay, it is definitely this coronavirus that the person has. And so that knowledge and information is being transferred as quickly as it's being created to as many sites internationally as possible.
It's 8 minutes before eight. We're talking to Professor Dr. Eileen Marty, who's written several medical books on infectious diseases. What are they looking for exactly at O'Hare, and how are they going to examine patients? What are the symptoms of this?
So the symptoms of First of all, let's back it up. Let's talk about what is a coronavirus. So there are, it's a huge group of different viruses divided into different classes, alpha, beta, gamma, delta, all these different types. There's coronaviruses all the time in the United States. I mean, about 30% of colds are caused by coronaviruses, but those are alpha coronaviruses, and they're much less dangerous. SARS, MERS, and this new virus are beta coronaviruses, a different category of coronaviruses. And these viruses tend to go deep into the respiratory tract and cause pneumonia-like symptoms, very severe respiratory symptoms. So you get, your patient is going to have a fever, the person's going to have a cough, they may or may not have a runny nose, they're going to have shortness of breath, they're going to have difficulty breathing. That's what this virus does to the people who have been clearly diagnosed as having it. Now, that's where we are right now. So what are they screening for? They're screening for fever, and they're asking questions. Where have you been? What have you done? Who you may have been exposed to, that sort of thing. So part of it is verbal, and the other part is fever. Now, having said that we're screening for fever doesn't mean that you're going to catch every case because, number one, we don't know the incubation period yet for this virus, and number two, people who are immunocompromised for whatever reason may not manifest fever and yet have shortness of breath and also other respiratory symptoms. What they're not going to be looking for is the kind of symptoms that in somebody who's not walking anymore with this disease, who's severely ill. And what we're seeing in victims who have become severely ill from this new coronavirus is, in addition to the respiratory problems, we're seeing renal problems. We're seeing renal failures in some individuals.
How is it spread?
We don't know how it's spread, but as a respiratory virus, the odds are that it's being spread through coughing and sneezing and contact with secretions from coughing and sneezing that your hands put in contact with. So that's the most likely route through which it's spread. Initially, when the first cases were identified in Wuhan, there was a concern that it was being spread by contact with animals. Now, and let me put that aside for a second. So one of the concerns was, are you eating properly cooked foods? And is that still a consideration for how this particular virus is spread? Possibly. So we can't rule out that it isn't also spread from undercooked or uncooked food. So we're still advising that people be mindful of what they eat. But bear in mind, any of these respiratory viruses that we know of will also spread by contact. So that's one of the key reasons that we advise washing of the hands. That's incredibly important, keeping your hands clean. And then if your hands are not clean, please don't touch your mouth or mucous membranes, your eyes, that sort of thing, because you'll be directly contaminating yourself. So these are just basic kinds of recommendations to reduce any individual's risk.
And the hand sanitizer, Purell, and those others that we use, do they really do any good?
Well, so coronaviruses are envelope viruses that will be affected if you use one of these alcohol-based sanitizers. So you will reduce your risk by using those, but hand washing is always better than the hand sanitizer. So the hand sanitizer is if you can't wash your hands and you still want to have your hands as clean as possible.
By the way, go ahead, doctor.
No, go ahead, Bob.
I was just going to say that on our Facebook live cast last night, which is still posted at facebook.com/Serrat and Murciano, I did demonstrate for Marianne how the virus is spread. And Eileen, I don't think you should watch that because, you won't approve. But wash your hands. That's the bottom line. And our thanks to the expert on infectious diseases, Eileen Marty, a professor at the Department of Medicine.
One more quick thing I want to mention that I think is really important, and that is because the symptoms mimic those of flu and other respiratory illnesses, it's really a great idea if you advise your listeners to make sure they have the flu vaccine. You don't want to be worried that you might have this new coronavirus when in fact you have something that we already have treatments for, right? Which is one of the big differences. So it would be very wise if people made sure they were up to date on their vaccinations as well. And it'll help the epidemiologist as well.
Okay, there you have it from the professor at the Department of Medicine at FIU College of Medicine, Dr. Eileen Marty. Always good talking to you, and I'm going to wash my hands right now.
Excellent. Thank you, Bob.
All right.
Take care.
Have a good day. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. It is 10 after 8. Don't you love it how this time of year, if you have friends in warm weather climates, they stick it to you? Okay, well, here's a little rebuttal we have. As temperatures drop to unusually low levels across South Florida this week, the National Weather Service is warning residents to keep an eye to the sky. They say don't be surprised if you see iguanas falling from the trees as lows drop into the 30s and 40s overnight. At least we don't have falling lizards here. Iguanas, which are cold-blooded lizards, slow down and stiffen up when temperatures drop to a certain level. It's at this point they tend to lose grip of trees. The National Weather Service is urging Floridians that while they may be stiff and motionless, the displaced iguanas are not dead.
That's hilarious. Do they, like, faint?
They just fall. They just fall out of the tree.
Can you imagine having an iguana in your hair?
Yeah, that's what happens if you're in Florida. You see, it's, not bad to be in Chicago, even with our weather here.
See, it's not the iguanas. It's the pythons that would bother me.
That could be a problem.
Yes.
That could be a problem. It's 8:11, and we were talking about the Baseball Hall of Fame. And I noticed here, Dave, that, Jeter and Walker got in. And
yes.
Then Curt Schilling had 70%. And yep. You need, what, 75%?
75%. Right? He was named on 278 of the 397 ballots cast. He went up about 10%. Well, not even. Actually, a little less than that, I think, from last year. Somewhere around 10% more than last year.
And Curt Schilling was behind him with 61%. Roger Clemens was behind Schilling.
Yeah, Clemens went up about 2% from last year. He and Barry Bonds are almost neck and neck. In fact, Clemens got one more vote than Bonds. So it appears those two have been linked, and those two are pretty much in a dead heat as far as the voting. So we'll see if they ever separate. But the question is, will they continue to get more support? Because you only have X amount of years to get there, and you get bumped from the ballot.
And so in the case of Bonds, has his support been growing? Did he have more votes than he did year?
Yeah, it was, again, very similar to Clemens. He went up from 59% to 60.7%. So a marginal increase for both of those guys.
And there's your Baseball Hall of Fame report. I enjoy watching, I think, is it, I can't remember now if it's ESPN or MLB, that they'll cover the whole ceremony, which, do they do that in August?
MLB does it.
Yeah.
It's July, I think it's July, the last Sunday in July.
My favorite part of that is when they introduce all the Hall of Famers, and they come on stage, and it makes you feel old because you see your boyhood heroes in some cases kind of hobbling up there. But it's a great part of the program.
I was out there for Ron Santo's induction a few years back, and that was the thing that struck me, was seeing all of these guys on one stage.
Yeah,
and there were so many, and some of them have since passed on, but
sure.
It's really a remarkable day. And of course, Hawk Harrelson will be among those honored this year, and Marvin Miller, who was the head of the Players Association. They were previously announced as inductees. So by the way, Sammy Sosa up a little bit from last year, but still well short. Yeah. And he's only got, I think, two more years on the ballot.
I wonder if the Cubs are ever going to officially make up with him.
I don't know. He wasn't mentioned among the commentators for the Marquee Network.
No, I guess not. Nor was Mark Grace. That's another story. It's 8:14, and we're going to get the entertainment report here momentarily. and Ozzy Osbourne dealing with an illness, and a new documentary coming about Jeffrey Epstein.
For news at 10, watch WGN. Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, Dan Roan, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV news at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN.
It is 8:19. Dean Richards is on vacation this week. We'll get to our entertainment report from Alicia Quarles, senior news correspondent for Daily Mail TV, in a second. First, a couple of items. A documentary about Jeffrey Epstein and how the millionaire sex offender avoided scrutiny is coming to Lifetime. You know, this was going to happen, right? Surviving Jeffrey Epstein will air this summer, according to the cable channel. And Ozzy Osbourne says he's been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. The 71-year-old Grammy winner said the diagnosis came after a fall last year. Osbourne said he really wants to get well and get back to performing because he misses his fans. His wife, Sharon, said the diagnosis was not a death sentence by any stretch of the imagination, but he has good days and he has bad days. And as Steve reported on the news, Terry Jones, a member of the Monty Python comedy troupe, has passed away at 77. His family said he died after a long, extremely brave, but always good-humored battle with a rare form of dementia. And let's get more now from Alicia Quarles. Good morning. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. And first off, let's talk about this exclusive you folks are working on involving the Las Vegas shooter.
That's right. We'll have an exclusive on Daily Mail TV today about Stephen Paddock, the Las Vegas shooter, and his secret mistress, who was 29 years old. And actually, she's providing insight into why he did this. They had an affair on and off for a couple of years. And she says leading up to the shooting, he sent her text messages that were very alarming, saying that people were terrible, that he didn't want to be in this world anymore. He sent these messages all up until September 29th. Of course, this shooting happened in October. So this sheds insight into why it happened.
Okay, more on that coming up on Daily Mail TV, 3 o'clock on WGN television. And now to Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. Now what?
it wouldn't be a good day unless we talked about them, right?
Right.
So now the Canadian people are clapping back. They're saying, listen, we don't want to pay for your security. 80,000 people have signed a petition saying, pay for your own security. We don't want to do it. Of course, Canada is a Commonwealth of Britain, and they're saying, your private citizens now pay for it yourselves.
And so they, I know now, are asking that the paparazzi sort of leave them alone, but that's never going to happen, is it? I mean, and in Canada, I guess it's not quite as crazy as it is in the UK or in Southern California, but what's the outlook for them?
Point, it's never going to happen. So when they initially went to Canada, no pictures really surfaced of them, except for Meghan visiting a women's shelter. And now, of course, paparazzi pictures are coming out. Meghan and Harry are threatening to sue these photo agencies. But to your point, now you're celebrities, it's never going to happen. So there is no play for them unless they want to move to France, where there are paparazzi laws protecting little kids, so they won't take pictures of them. But other than that, your celebrities deal with it.
Yeah. All right, couples in the news, Rihanna and Drake. What's up with them?
So Rihanna and Drake, of course, dated back in the day. And they were at the MTV VMAs in 2016, and he famously tried to kiss her. But she's broken up with her billionaire boyfriend, and now they've been seen out and about. So there's rumors that they might be dating again. This is a big deal, and, you know, in the young people's world, people love them together, so we're trying to see what happens with them.
And also, we should mention Pamela Anderson. She's getting married again. How many is this for her?
This is wedding number 5. So maybe 5's the lucky charm. She married producer John Peters. So this is interesting. They dated over 30 years ago. He says, Pamela's always been the one for me. He says, you know, there's a lot of beautiful women in Hollywood, but none have her heart or her smarts. So they got married secretly a couple of days ago, and she wrote a poem to him. He says that she's a true artist, and everybody needs to look out for her artistry.
Okay, we'll do that. Kim Kardashian has revealed something, and this is about her first daughter, correct?
Yes, yeah, so that name North, there were so many rumors about how she got the name. Did Anna Wintour or Vogue name her? Can you guess who actually named North?
No. Tell us.
Jay Leno.
So really?
Jay Leno, as a joke, when Kim was pregnant, said, you should name her North. This is on his show. And she's like, no, I'm not going to do that. But it kind of caught fire, and she decided to name her daughter after Jay's joking situation.
Okay. Did he ever explain why he wanted the name North?
I've got to go back and look at the clip. He didn't explain it, but friends like Pharrell Williams came afterwards and said, you know, North is the highest point of ascension. Got very esoteric on her about the meaning of North. So okay. she went with it.
Okay. And then there's a new book coming from Chelsea Clinton, isn't there?
Yes, yeah, so Chelsea Clinton has a children's book line, and this is the latest in her line of children's books, and this is basically focusing on what women can do sports-wise. So it's all about great women athletes, Serena Williams, Chrissy Yamaguchi, it's on and on and on, and basically she says that it's the She Persisted series, and she wants young girls to know you can do it, and look at all these women that have done it.
And as we mentioned earlier, Terry Jones passed away, a member of the Monty Python comedy troupe. He was 77 years old and a very popular figure, especially in London, wasn't he?
Incredibly popular in London and worldwide. Everybody loves Monty Python. He died Sunday evening with his wife by his side, his family said in a statement. So this is just, it's sad. It's the passing of an icon worldwide.
Last night in the Surratt household, we caught up on a couple of things I wanted to ask you about. We watched Curb Your Enthusiasm from Sunday night, and that it got pretty good reviews, the opener of the new season, didn't it?
It did get good reviews. Of course, you know, Larry David, spoiler alert for anybody that hasn't seen it yet, turn away right now if you haven't seen it yet. So Larry David didn't want to go on a certain lunch date, so he wore a MAGA hat when he got to the lunch date. And, of course, his co-worker, colleague that he was going to meet, sees it and runs away. But I think it got good reviews because it really speaks on how polarizing politics is now in America. So it was interesting. It was a commentary on where we are right now.
And I got in trouble last night because my wife wanted to watch The Politician, which is this Ryan Murphy series. I saw one. I didn't want to watch the second one. I kind of lost interest. Have you seen it, Alicia?
I have not. You know, I've got to say, I'm not the biggest Gwyneth Paltrow fan. So that's the reason I didn't watch it. But why did you turn away that first episode?
You know what? I just didn't care enough about the main character, I guess. But, you know, Ryan Murphy, he certainly comes up with some creative concepts, and it was well done. But, you know, you got to make me care about these people. And maybe if I stuck with it, I would have. I don't know.
I agree. I think if you really want to get into politics and the state of it, watch some Veep. Even though it's now off the air, it always has finger on the pulse.
Yeah, I got to do that. I do. And then we mentioned a few minutes ago about Ozzy Osbourne with Parkinson's. Was this widely known? Is this the first time they revealed his illness?
It was the first time that they officially revealed his illness. They sat down, of course, with Good Morning America on Tuesday to talk about this. But there has been all these rumors that Ozzy was sick, that he was dying, these terrible rumors. And so I think he wanted to, as he said in the interview, quote, I feel better now that I've owned up to the fact that I have Parkinson's. So he wanted to put it out there why he has it. He says his whole body hurts. It's just a difficult situation, but he wanted to stop the rumors and address it head on.
All right. Want to give us a little preview of what's coming up and what you're working on? Daily Mail TV, weekdays, 3 p.m., Channel 9. What's next for you, Alicia?
Well, of course, we've got our big exclusive today with the Vegas Shooter's Girlfriends. That's the big one, and I keep teasing it, but it's our big entertainment event. We've got the Grammys. And then next week, I'm headed off to Super Bowl, so I have some good updates for you from there.
Oh, really? Daily Mail TV covers the Super Bowl. Well, you'll have a lot of entertainment there. And, you know, I haven't been keeping up with what's going on, the halftime show. You got any scoops for us on that?
We do. So Demi Lovato will be singing the national anthem. J-Lo is the big halftime performer, along with Shakira. Lady Gaga's performing the night before Super Bowl. So every night there's going to be something serious. And it's Miami. Better believe we're going to see some Gloria Estefan at halftime, a little Pitbull, 305. So it should be a really fun show.
All right. I don't know when you're going to be in Miami, but did you hear us talking about this? You know, they've had some very, very cold temperatures in Miami, overnight lows dropping into the 30s and 40s. So the National Weather Service has issued a warning to folks there because iguanas apparently fall from the trees when the temperature gets to a certain level. They lose their grip and then they just fall. A lot of people think the displaced iguanas are dead, but they're not. So be careful if you're going to southern Florida, Alicia.
Well, thank you for the heads up. I didn't realize the temperature dropped, and I appreciate the heads up.
Heads up, yes. All right, it's Alicia Quarrel, senior news correspondent, Daily Mail TV. We'll check in with you again tomorrow. Have a good day.
You as well. Bye.
See ya. All right, and let's get in a quick call here before we go to the news. BJ, is that your name?
That's me. Know you from the club. And love hearing you on the radio again.
Thank you.
I have great news. There's kind of a copycat. I guess they're the copycat band I don't know if you'd call them a band or an acting troupe, but they're on Southport at the Music Box Theater, and they're doing the Monty Python show.
So it's kind of like a Monty Python tribute troupe?
Yeah, the tribute group. Yeah, they're terrific. I went to see them. It's been there for weeks. Went to see them and laughed as much as I would have seeing the real thing. And I remember them from 100 years ago. They were so funny.
Right.
And they do a lot of their stuff, and they're really a lot of fun. And because you can't have the real thing, obviously, this would be the next best thing. Music Box Theater. It's on Southport. I pass it every day. I drive my little godchild to school.
It's a great,
and we go right by it.
It's a great venue. Thanks for the tip, BJ. Appreciate it. Some of these lists that come out that we all talk about and that you hear on the news are ridiculous, because it's usually just common sense stuff or recommendations that nobody remembers or follows. But we're looking at this story that came out headlined 20 Brilliant Tricks Guaranteed to Take Years Off Heart and Bones. A team of experts revealed their tips to transform your health concerns. And I went over the list of 20, and there were about 10 that were ridiculous that I'm not even going to waste your time with. But I found a few that you're really going to remember and you may actually follow. For example, one of the things they have on this list, carry your shopping twice a week. All adults should be doing some strength-building activity at least twice weekly to improve bone density and joint health. And one way of doing it is to carry your shopping home to keep muscles in good shape as they support our bones, according to one doctor at the Royal College of General Practitioners in London. Well, but we all throw the groceries in the car, right? So what does that mean? I mean, I have been known to take fast walks to the grocery store and carry shopping bags, but I can't buy too much when I do,
right.
I do
you're
that.
Somewhat limited.
Yeah. Plus, those bags, they're so cheap, they just break all the time.
Well, yeah,
and
that's
food goes flying.
Get a double bag.
Yeah, I got a double bag.
Maybe carry them to the car instead of push the cart to the car with them in the cart.
Well, yeah, at the very least, that's a good idea, Steve. How about this one? Sit down and stand up 20 times twice a day. We can do that. Repeatedly sitting and standing can help maintain knee and hip strength. Experts say here, when you stop for lunch and at the end of the day, do 20 repetitions of sit to stands. And one physiotherapist at a hospital says, from sitting on a chair with both feet flat on the floor, stand up without using your hands to push you up. Focus on using the glutes in your bottom. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried to do that, sit on the floor with your legs crossed and get up?
Yes, I have.
That is so hard.
Some days I can do it.
Yeah.
Wear ankle weights when you watch TV. Wearing ankle weights can help strengthen the quadriceps and hamstrings. And one doctor says a lot of my elderly patients watch TV for long periods of time. And so he recommends doing this.
That seems like a good idea.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exercising in some way while you watch TV, you know, that is a good idea. Climb stairs. This you're going to remember. I guarantee it. Climb stairs on your tiptoes. We have stairs in our place, and I always think, you know, running up and down the stairs is good enough. And you guys who are training for that stair climb, climbing the stairs on tiptoes can strengthen calf muscles as well as the arches of your feet. Now, there also is a recommendation for something you really should eat at breakfast, and also why the bananas you buy and eat should be green, Okay, I'll get to that here momentarily. Let's finish up these tips from a team of experts who have revealed their suggestions to transform your health concerns. And I've gone through the list. They had 20, but about 10 of them were ridiculous. But the rest, I actually think you're going to remember these, and it might help you a little bit. Okay, here's one that I will never forget now. Eat your bananas green. Greenish bananas are a good source of probiotics that are good for your gut, according to the experts. Greenish bananas are a particularly good source of this, but as they ripen, the fiber breaks down, meaning there is less in yellow bananas. I never knew that. Did you?
I didn't, and I'm a regular consumer of yellow bananas.
Well, switch to green.
Yeah, but now, they don't taste as good.
No.
Yeah, I know. They're a little hard. Got that,
it's
hard to peel.
Their consistency isn't as good.
Now, I said probiotics, but actually, I'm looking here, and it says they're a good source of prebiotics. I don't know anything about prebiotics, but apparently green bananas are good for you. Okay? Enough said. Here's one you'll also remember. I don't know if you're going to want to do this, but also on the list, at breakfast, be sure to eat prunes. Daily, prunes can enhance bone formation and reduce bone density loss, which you have to worry about as you get older. A study in the U.S. found that when eaten daily for 6 months, prunes were beneficial to bone health because of the variety of nutrients in the fruit. Now, here's another one that...
I thought they were good for other things.
Yeah, well, how's your breakfast?
Meaning it better be by a bathroom all the time. Prunes.
This is something that will be hard to get out of your mind the next time you brush your teeth. The experts say this is really a good thing to do. Brush your teeth on one leg. Well, we can all do this, right? Mm. Brushing your teeth while standing on one leg has been recommended by the experts. Aging and injury to muscles and ligaments affect our balance. Practicing standing on one leg for short periods of time, such as while brushing your teeth, helps reverse that. Changes like this have been shown to reduce the risk of falls substantially. A French study a few years ago found that this exercise program helped reduce falls that caused injuries by 37%. Falls leading to serious injuries by 43% and broken bones by 61%, all by doing exercises like brushing your teeth on one leg. Okay? See, and they say this program is not educational. Now, here's one that we keep hearing about. I keep hearing about this. My wife keeps telling me to do this And I have a hard time with this. Skip a meal or two. Fasting for 16 hours can help you beat heart disease by improving the body's sensitivity to insulin. You heard about this? This is the new thing.
Intermittent fasting.
Yeah, right. Yeah. A lot of people say, well, no, don't eat as soon as you get up. Wait, fast, leave many, many hours between dinner and breakfast, for example. Fasting for 16 hours, the equivalent of missing a couple of meals once a week, so you don't have to do it every day, I guess, can help you beat heart disease by improving the body's sensitivity to insulin, say some doctors. One consultant cardiologist says that the hormone insulin is produced by the body to convert sugar from food into energy. However, in people who are overweight, insulin often stops working properly as the body becomes resistant to its effects. By breaking the food cycle, even for just a short time, it resets the body's sensitivity to the hormone, and this can help reverse the risk of diabetes and help people to lose weight, both of which are risk factors for heart disease, heart attack, and stroke. And get off the bus a stop early. Getting off the bus at an earlier stop or even walking or cycling can help reduce the risk of a heart attack. Walking or cycling even part of the way to work may reduce your risk of heart disease. After looking at the commuting habits of 43 million people between the ages of 25 and 74 across England, researchers from the University of Leeds found that in areas where walking or cycling to work were more common, the incidence of heart attacks decreased for both men and women during the following 2 years. Well, that makes sense, right? Drink a daily cup of black or green tea. Tea drinkers have a lower risk of heart disease, but it is only the black or green varieties that have a beneficial effect on the heart, according to some doctors. Tea drinkers have a lower risk of heart disease, but only the black or green varieties have the beneficial effect on the heart, according to one doctor, a consultant cardiologist in London. He says green and black tea drinkers have a lower risk of heart disease. Drinking these types of teas is an indicator of a healthy lifestyle, but also the tea contains antioxidants which protect against cell damage. And also they say drinking the tea is relaxing in itself, which is good for the heart. Tea drinking also linked to a lower risk of cancer. One doctor says anything from 3 cups a week to 4 cups in a day is fine. So whatever you're drinking in the tea department is good. Again, I enjoy the... Well, we have 2 coffee machines here at the radio station, and one of them... Well, actually, they both. You can get the hot water out of both. And to wake up in the morning when I get in here just before 5, I press the hot water button. But then instead of putting a cup under the spout, I put my hand under the spout. And this wakes me up and gets me going in the morning.
Yeah.
You may have noticed the bandages on my hand.
It's not recommended, Bob.
Okay. All right. We have Joe here from Marengo. Joe, do you have something to add to this list?
Yeah, I just wonder about the study about all the accidents that happen in your house in the bathroom.
Oh, if you're standing on one leg, you mean?
Yeah, brushing your teeth. You got a bunch of old people, which I happen to be part of, and you're in your bathroom brushing your teeth on one leg, and you stumble and fall.
Yeah, well, start by doing that and holding on to something, I'd say.
I would do it between a doorway or something so you don't fall down.
Yeah, that's a good tip.
And also choke on your toothbrush.
Yeah.
See you, Bob.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it. How about this? Eat lots of blue fruit. Any blue fruit or vegetables, such as blueberries or aubergines, what's that, are particularly good for the heart. Any blue fruit or vegetables are very good because they contain antioxidants which protect against cell damage. What blue fruit.
What are aubergines?
I don't know.
To anybody?
No clue.
Yeah, I don't know.
Ask Marianne. She'd know.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. It's probably in that green shake she prepares for me that's very healthy and tastes like the lawn. Take blood pressure. By the way, I'm very upset because at the Mariano's I go to, they used to have the blood pressure machine, and I would always check my blood pressure a couple times while I was shopping, and now they don't have the machine there anymore. Keeping track of your blood pressure using a good quality home blood pressure monitor has been recommended by the experts. If you're over 50, you should know your average blood pressure, cholesterol, and blood sugar readings, as high levels of any of these can increase the risk of heart disease. And let's see, there's one more on the list here. Salt. Avoid salt entirely. Allows your taste buds to get used to food as it should taste. One doctor says salt is associated with increased blood pressure, which in turn increases the risk of heart attacks and stroke. The more you cook with it, the more used to it you get. Stopping cooking with salt entirely allows your taste buds to get used to food as it should taste. It takes about 4 to 6 weeks for your taste buds to adjust, but once they do, you'll be surprised how unappetizing the salty foods you used to crave and love now taste. Boy, I remember my dad with the salt shaker. It was just, okay, I'm lifting my arm up now and making a shaking downward motion like 7 or 8 times, and that's how he used to salt his food. I've been trying to wean myself off of that, but not having much luck. When Marianne doesn't look, I add a couple of sprinkles.
Do you?
Yeah, I really do. I'm addicted. Well, I'm more addicted to sugar. Had a goo-goo cluster last night after dinner when my wife went upstairs.
Okay, that sounds like you are sneaking sugar, Bob. That
I admit
doesn't
it.
Sound good.
No.
But you just admitted it at a 50,000-watt radio station.
Are we on the air? I thought I was still doing a practice show. Thought we'd start the new show next week. We'll talk to John Williams, find out what he's got going on his show, and wrap things up here. Coming up also, the news next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Hey, Joe, hit the traveling music full speed, full level for a couple of seconds before we get out
full
of here
gain,
and bring it down.
Yeah,
full gain, because people are asking for a little bit of this. It's Pat Metheny. Here, listen to a little bit of it. Last Train. get it? We're heading out. We're heading home from the morning show here. Okay, and John Williams is coming up.
I'd like to think of it rather than heading home, hooking another car to the train.
That's yours.
I feel like I'm riding a horse going out into the sunset.
This is traveling music. Yeah, into
it's
the
traveling
sunset,
music.
Right,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's good car radio music, too. What's on the John Williams show
Don't
today?
Don't cross me, Surratt, or I'll pick up a chair and crash it on your head.
It's been done.
I have more sympathy to you or to the basketball players. I have more sympathy for what happened at that Kansas-Kansas State game than maybe most people do. We'll talk a little bit about that on the show today. Pizza Day, part two. We'll also visit with Phil Vitale, the restaurant critic at the Tribune. Have you ever complained to a restaurant? And not just because you want to vent, but you want them to fix a problem?
Well, yeah, and my people in the business tell me if you're really a good friend, you'll tell me when something's wrong. Don't feel shy about that.
I'm going to talk a little bit about that in the 10 o'clock hour with the restaurant critic for the Tribune and continue to laugh at the silly pizzas people make. Obviously, we'll be following the impeachment, too.
Are you getting into those communist pizzas, the kind with bean sprouts on them and so forth?
Some with beets. I was outraged.
John's coming up after the news. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.